Good morning, and I am going to, I hope to have some fun today to really share with you all something that a lot of people called me from around the world, all these different organizations in Singapore, Casbah, Middle East, and so forth, because I guess I am notorious now for being the first person to get these pirates put in jail in China. And it was pretty exciting, and it's been a really interesting road, and I'm going to give you all the secret sauce of how I did it. A lot of people have asked me to come and speak about it, and I'm going to give it to you all today. And I've got some fun pictures. I was able to really get inside the inner workings of what happened in China, and this is sort of how I did it. So, give you a little background. ABS-CBN is basically the Disney of the Philippines. We've got 33 TV stations, 10 studios. They make more TV shows and movies of all the studios in the United States combined. So that's a lot of work. When I came to ABS-CBN, they said, it's all on your shoulders. We've got a major, major problem. We don't know how to fix it. Can you please help? So we distribute the content in 190 countries, and we do it in lots of different platforms. And we've got the piracy happening everywhere, you know, on YouTube, on Google, Facebook, private chat rooms, and so forth. But what I'm going to talk to you today about are these boxes. That was a major problem, and it was really biting into our sales and our whole, you know, we have sales teams all over the world, and I get 300 emails a day normally, but with this I was getting double that, with everyone complaining and being very upset that it was biting into the bottom line. My basic strategy for having a brand protection team is to not have internal people. I have a large budget, and then I just have people all over the world, and so I can be very agile. Because in case in point, with this particular case, it popped up, and it was quite global, and it really was helpful to just be able to hire people as I went along. So how it started was that we were getting reports that in Florida there were these boxes that were being sold. So of course we purchased one. These boxes not only had all of our movies and the TV shows, but they also had of all the major studios. There was Fox Sports, there was all the soccer from Europe, everything, you could get it all. I went to some of the studios, and they were busy with other things, so it was really all on my shoulders to do it all. And I said, okay. So we started with undercover purchases in Florida. We found that the person on the left is the pirate who started this Philstream, and he was quite a marketing guru. He had numerous YouTube videos, he had a Facebook page, he was actually going to our dealers and soliciting them to be his dealer, he was going to our customers, and he really had, to use an expression, chutzpah. He really did. It was really bothersome because he really was getting more and more inviting into our business. So we started with, I hired investigators in Florida to look into these distributors, and these are, you know, this is from his Facebook, and we're able to find out information about him. We purchased more and more from them, which brought us up to Canada. In Toronto, there was a distributor there who was also soliciting, but really for the person out of China. We also were able to discover that there were distributors in Chicago, and we started monitoring the Facebook pages, purchasing there. We also saw that there was Hong Kong. I hired investigators in Hong Kong. We saw that there were shell companies that the Chinese group was using to funnel the money. So I flew there, I met with the government officials there and investigators to see what we could do. I hired an investigator. At this point, we had arrested the distributors in Florida, Chicago, LA, and so forth. But we kept them, that they promised that they would not contact the factory in China because, you know, I didn't want him to go underground and to, I really obviously wanted to get him. But I knew that China was iffy. I wasn't quite sure if we were going to be able to. So at the same time, I have the Hong Kong investigator. We knew where he was located, the factory, where they were programming these boxes, but it was a matter of really getting proof. I flew to China. I had about 6 trips there where they kept saying, you know, why should we care about this? All the problems are really occurring in the United States and in Canada. They were being sold. They weren't being sold in China. So our investigator was able to go undercover, and he was able to get all the information he needed. The interesting part from a legal perspective is they require a notary. And it's not like what we consider as a notary here where they witness your signature. The notary literally goes along with the undercover investigator and takes notes, and he's kind of a witness of what really occurred. So it was kind of interesting because our investigator had to sort of present this quote-unquote notary as sort of a friend who was there. But that was sort of the only way that the police would recognize the information that he gained from his undercover investigations. So we sued civilly as well as criminally in Florida and Chicago. But we filed these civil lawsuits, but we didn't serve. Just so we would keep it undercover until we saw what happened in China. So for those of you who may not know, the box capital of China, in terms of where they're all being made, is Shenzhen. It's actually was very convenient. What I did was I would stay in Hong Kong, and then I would have a car take me over, which is about 45 minutes into Shenzhen. And the reason that was so helpful is that obviously you probably all know that Facebook, you can't access Facebook or YouTube or any of it. So it was really helpful because I could then monitor what was going on in Hong Kong where I can access that, then take a 45-minute drive over and be able to show them up-to-date screenshots and so forth. Because if I had been staying in China, I couldn't do that. So I met with the various administrative offices, and then they gave me access to the various police teams until finally, in visiting several police stations, you know, one of the things that was just so quaint is they would serve me tea, and people were just wonderful there. But finally, this one particular police station agreed that they would review the documents. They didn't say absolutely that they would do it, but they would consider it. That was about a year ago, in December. And so it was close to Christmas, and so I went back not knowing what was going to happen. Then in February, we were told that, I think in 2 days, they're going to do a raid. I had to hop on a plane, headed to Hong Kong, and then we went over. One of the things that was really interesting is the fact that in the U.S., a raid is always, it goes together with arrests. But in China, it's not that way. They do the raid, and then they detain. And here everyone was there. We were very lucky. The owners of the factory and the programmers and so forth were all taken. And I was there for the raid, and I asked, of course, with a translator, one of the head police officers who's heading the raid, are there going to be arrests? And he went on and on and on for probably, I don't know, 10 minutes. And then I asked the translator, and she was going to just translate word for word, but I could feel a gut feeling. And I said, just tell me the bottom line, one sentence. She said, well, he doesn't think they're guilty. They're saying it's the Canadians. It's really all the fault of the Canadians. I said, oh boy, this is not good. So the law firm I used, the Highlands firm, which are fantastic, and they have offices all over, the head partner, because this was last second, had meetings in Australia, And so I called him, and I had other partners that were there, but not the one I'm used to working with, Yunzi. And I said, you've got to help me. This is not going well, because I'm hearing that they're already saying that they're innocent and so forth. So I said, please, can you get me a meeting with maybe the head supervisor of the police there? And so he did. He called me back. And so I had this chance. And I felt like I was in front of the Supreme Court with a translator. I had 2 hours with all my documents, and I just gave it all I could to explain that really the crime is occurring here in Shenzhen. Here's all the proof. And so finally he said to me, look, give us 24 hours. That's the way this works. And then we are going to interrogate everybody, and then we'll make a decision. And so this is a picture of the Starbucks. I felt like an expectant father. We were waiting the next day in the morning to hear in the 24 hours what was going to happen. And so we got a call from the head of the chief there, the police, and he told the partner that was with me in Chinese that, yes, we're actually, they arrested four of them. The two owners and the two senior programmers, plus, and I was just ecstatic, but they had a special request that they wanted to take me for a special lunch with the whole police team. So you can see on the right, it was wonderful, and they were, you know, we talked about the fact that they were going to probably be in jail for several, years, and there was bail, but in this case, they're not going to do bail, and then there was going to be trial, and I'll explain about that. And to the left there is the two of the one on the left is the man that I chatted with for 2 hours, and one of the things you might find interesting is that it was explained to me that with the police, in order to institute the arrests, that gentleman that I basically gave my whole presentation to, he really advocated for us. The police requires, they have it's not really a tribunal, but there are six people who have to be convinced to then, and they do a vote in terms of deciding on the arrests. And so he really went to bat for us and got them, I heard, to then vote towards the arrests. So I went and I had plaques done and that wasn't so easy because in terms of even having it in Mandarin and so forth, it's really hard to even keep track of the language and so forth that's on it. This is a picture of the court. Now, one of the things that's interesting in the U.S., a judge or a case, they will actually normally just section off a week or 2 weeks for court. But the way it works in China, is that it's just a matter of, it might be just 3 hours, like a little chunk, and then they will sort of meet, and we have the defendants there, and then they will be questioned. There are two judges, and then it's maybe a few months later, and there'll be another quote-unquote trial, which is more like a hearing. So we've had two. They're still in jail. They want more documents and so forth, and that's where we are in terms of waiting for the third one that'll be coming. Everything has to be legalized, which is very, very difficult. This is in the court, so you can see there are little doorways there. That's a badminton court. That's so apparently for the staff to exercise and so forth. You can see the reach of the fill stream. This was a global investigation. It took about 8 weeks from beginning to end when we're having the trial. So one of the things that I think was just so important was the fact that I just got on a plane. I was the person who was passionate about this. I think I see with a lot of people that they really rely on their investigators and their lawyers around the world, and I think even though these lawyers are fantastic, I don't think they would have had the same passion to fight the way I did. I think they would have just stopped at the point where the police would have said, oh, they're innocent, and not done the next step. So I think it's, you know, the key here is to really never, never give up. And one of the things I want to share is just a little side thing is that, you know, I believe that, you know, in the jobs that we have, it's really important in terms of advocating for our companies and for the content and so forth. But there are also things that we are exposed to. And for me, in having now worked for this company for 4 years, I've had the honor of meeting some amazingly inspiring people, including one woman, Cecilia Banda, who was a CNN hero. She's basically like the Mother Teresa of the Philippines. And she has been, I was able to not only meet her, but see her whole team. And she is going after the child traffickers. I think there are over 100,000 children that are still missing, but I was able to go and visit. She has saved the lives of over 10,000. And so the point is that I think all the people in this room, I'd like to create like a coalition of people, you know, please contact me on LinkedIn, where we could put our heads together. Because really, when I meet the cybercrime in the Philippines, when we go after the pirates, these are the same people that are going after the child traffickers. And so I think that there are things we could do because the laws are so great in the United States, if we can help to track them down. As you know, the gentleman from Subway for having child porn is in jail for 12 years. So most of the people that are the customers are coming from the US, but the victims are in the Philippines and elsewhere in Asia. So I think we can still use the same. I use a lot of investigators to help track who are behind the pirate sites. So I think we could put our heads together to do something and make a change as well. Maybe the CDSA and so forth would want to help support us as well. So that's just my little 2 cents personally, because the fact that, you know, this job has brought me to see a darker side of what's going on, but I think we could really make a difference in terms of doing any piracy and cyber enforcement too. And I felt really good as a last point in terms of what I did with this case. I'm a former prosecutor, so I really do look at black and white, and they really were bad. They were just absolutely, had no conscience. They knew absolutely what they were doing, and, it's really felt really good in terms of justice, in terms of that they are still sitting in jail. The Shenzhen jails are not glamorous by any means, and they were rightfully the head ones who were behind this. So feel free, if I'm at the end of my talk, but feel free to contact me if you have questions, and I can pass on the information of the investigators I used, the lawyers I used, the police that I worked with in Shenzhen. All of them were wonderful, and it was really a fantastic experience. And I think that I've heard in the past a lot of people will say you can't get anything done in China. But that's not true. They really do want to help us. And you just have to, just like here, when you're working with government agencies like the FBI and so forth, it's really important to just do your homework and have all your evidence, and they will help. And you have to be a little bit pushy too, which I know we all can do as well. So anyway, thank you so much.
Thank you, Alicia. That's a perfect segue. Thank you so much. She brought the law on the law one.